Welcome to Walk in Truth. These are the Bible teachings of Pastor Michael Lance, equipping you to reach out with God's truth to all people and apply that truth to today's issues, trends, and culture. Learn more when you visit walkintruth.com. Now here's part two of Pastor Michael's teaching in 2 Samuel chapter 14 called The Best Laid Plans.
So he goes to this area of Tekoa. He gets a woman who's supposed to be this wise woman. Maybe she's very good at being an actress as well. And he says, I want you to pretend like you're a mourner. I want you to put on mourning garments. I want you to not put on any anointing oil. And I want you to pretend like you've been mourning for days upon days upon days. Dress the part, look the part, and I'll tell you what to do. You're going to go and speak to the king in this manner. And so Joab put the words in her mouth. So he gave her the script. He said, this is what I want you to do. The king's having a tough time, so I want you to dress up like a mourner, pretend, and go to him, and I'll give you the story. Here's what you are going to say. And so he put the words in her mouth. Now, when the woman of Tekoa, verse 4, spoke to the king, she fell on her face to the ground. And remember, the king had his court, and people would often come to the king with difficult situations or pleas for help or even gifts for the king. She presented herself. She fell on her face to the ground, prostrated herself, and said, help, O king, a plea that I'm sure David would have tenderness towards. The king said to her, what is your trouble? She said, truly I'm a widow, for my husband is dead. And your maidservant had two sons, but the two of them struggled together in the field, and there was no one to separate them. So one struck the other and killed him. Now, you could see David. He's the king. He sits on his throne. He hears these kinds of stories all day long. He sees this poor mourning widow. She's got two sons. The other son killed the other in a struggle. They were in a field, and they were struggling together. There was no one to break up the fight, and it got terrible. And the one killed the other. Two sons in a field, one kills the other. What story does it remind you of? The story of Cain and Abel. A well-known story to anybody who was Jewish in Jewish society. This was a main Sunday school, I should say Sabbath school lesson you would get as you grew up in a Jewish household. And so David may have thought back to that scene, and he may have thought back to his own sons, Absalom killing Amnon and all that went with that. Now behold, she said, the whole family has risen against your maidservant, and they say, hand over the one who struck his brother, that we may put him to death for the life of his brother whom he killed, and destroy the heir also. Thus, she says, they will extinguish or put out my coal, which is left. Another way of saying, he's the only light in my life, the only warmth I have left, so as to leave my husband, and she said she's a widow, neither name nor remnant on the face of the earth, my only surviving son. I know what he did was wrong. I know this shouldn't have happened, but he's all that I've got left. And if he dies, I'm going to be a widow without anything. And if he dies, the name of my dead husband will not even have an heir to continue that name. But this is a dilemma. And I have part of my family demanding, they're calling, texting, emailing. And they're saying, you need to hand him over to us now. Back in the day, vengeance often happened where a family that was wronged would appoint someone to be a manslayer. And they would go out and they would seek vengeance for the one killed in their family. There were cities of refuge set up so that the avenger of blood might not kill somebody if you unintentionally killed somebody. In her story, we don't know if the brother killed the other intentionally or just in the heat of the moment. And this is huge when it comes to the law. The law would say if there was something that happened in the heat of the moment, that's more like manslaughter. You know, if something happened, or maybe you were working somewhere and something flew off. A pick flew off and hit somebody. You didn't kill them on purpose. There's a difference with intent. The law has a lot to do with intent and premeditation. Well, in the story, she just says, look, the family's mad at me, and they want me to hand over my only son. Can you imagine being this woman? Now, we know that she's just pretending. This is not a real story. But we know Joab gave her the story. Why? Because he wants David to do something about Absalom. And whenever you hear a story about somebody else, let's say it's a loss, a difficulty, what do you immediately tend to do as an individual? You immediately start thinking about what? Your own children, your own grandchildren. And you start to apply the story to the ones that you love. And you may even have some difficult similarities to the story that you hear. Maybe it's a movie that you watched or a show or whatever. And so David certainly is resonating with the story. And David said to the woman, verse 8, "Go to your house and I will give orders concerning you." The NIV says, "I will issue an order in your behalf." So things are looking up. It seems like David's going to help her. And the woman of Tekoa said to the king, "Oh, my lord, the king, the iniquity is on me and my father's house, but the king and his throne are guiltless." She may be saying here that the king was concerned that he may be doing something wrong if this was an intentional killing, allowing bloodshed to go unpunished. She may be saying, "Let the guilt fall on me and my family, no matter what you do, king." So the king said, "Whoever speaks to you, bring him to me, and he will not touch you anymore." She was having issues with her family, so David said, "I'll protect you." Then she said, "Please let the king remember the Lord your God, so that the avenger of blood may not continue to destroy, lest they destroy my son." She's basically saying, "Will you make an oath before God?" And he said, "As the Lord lives, not one hair of your son shall fall to the ground." Now, when you have the king say that, man, you've got it going, right? He just made a vow before God that her son would be protected by the king of Israel. That is really what she wanted. Of course, if this was a real life situation, she'd be thrilled. But she presses a little bit more. Then the woman said, "Please let your maidservant speak," verse 12, "a word to my lord the king." And he said, "Speak." The woman sounds like a preacher. "Just one more thing, king. Just one more thing." David may have sighed and said, "Okay, what is it? Speak." And the woman said, "Why then have you planned such a thing against the people of God? For in speaking this word, the king is as one who is guilty, in that the king does not bring back his banished one." And the music plays. Dun, 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 dun. And the camera turns to David and he's like, "What? This sounds familiar," because Nathan the prophet came before David and shared a story. And David got enraged and he was righteously indignant until Nathan famously said, "You are that man." And now a woman dressed in mourning clothes says, "Oh, by the way, king, after I've told the story and you want to protect my son, a man you don't even know who's not part of the royal throne, we're just an average family in Israel. Hey, what about your banished son who killed your other son? Will you apply the same justice and mercy and grace to your own child?" Ouch. Sometimes we hear a story about some unknown person to us and we'd say, we should apply grace in that situation. Then we look at our own family dynamics and we're not applying grace where we told somebody else to apply grace. I'm sure you've never done that before. I'm sure you've never given someone advice in a situation that's tough and difficult and then looked in the mirror and said, "Uh-oh. I haven't applied the same grace to people that I say I love the most and are closest to me." Convicting, isn't it? In fact, the Bible, when it says don't judge, which people often take out of context, really has two requirements, two main requirements about judgment. Don't be a hypocrite when you judge. The Bible commands you to judge, but it says to make a righteous judgment. And it says don't judge hypocritically. Or don't just judge a book by its cover. Make sure you have the information. You can write down Matthew 7, verses 1 through about 4 or 5 there. And that's where Jesus said, "Take the log out of your own eye, then you'll see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye." He didn't say don't judge. He just said, make sure you can see clearly before you judge. And what will give you clarity is not living by a double standard. And so she confronts the king and she says, look at verse 13, middle of the verse, "The king is as one who is guilty." Now, David thought this was just going to be an average day of giving judgment in other people's cases. It's much more convenient when we're talking about somebody else. It's much more convenient if I can hit somebody sitting next to me when a sermon is going forth and say, "Did you hear that? Did you hear that?" Or when a sermon is being preached, to think to yourself, "I wish so-and-so was hearing this right now. In fact, I'm going to get a copy of this message and send it right over to them." Wait a minute. You might want to look at the log in your own eye first. Then you'll see clearly about the speck in your brother's eye. And so David now has been confronted. And he's probably kind of getting used to this. And so she says, she talks about the banished one that he has not brought back. And he says, "For we shall surely die," 14, "and are like water spilled on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again."
You'll hear more from Pastor Michael in a moment.
Did you miss part of today's message? You can always listen again on demand. Catch every teaching from Pastor Michael Lance on the Walk in Truth app or wherever you listen to podcasts. It's an easy way to keep growing in God's Word and stay grounded in biblical truth throughout your week. Just search for Walk in Truth and start listening anytime.
Your financial support helps keep Walk in Truth on the radio, and it also helps us reach people all over the world through the podcast. That means someone driving home from work, someone on a morning walk, or even someone on the other side of the globe can hear the hope of Jesus right when they need it most. And here's the cool part, every gift helps. Even a small step like becoming a monthly partner for just $5 a month makes a big impact. Think about it. For the price of less than one coffee, you could help keep Bible teaching going out day after day. So would you join us? Head over to walkintruth.com. That's walkintruth.com and become a partner today. And thank you.
We'd love to hear from you. If today's teaching on Walk in Truth encouraged you, challenged you, or raised a question, reach out and let us know. Send your comments, reactions, or questions to contact@walkintruth.com or give us a call at 844-48-TRUTH. Your story and feedback matter, and they help us continue equipping believers to apply God's truth to their daily walk. That's contact@walkintruth.com or 844-48-TRUTH. We look forward to hearing from you.
We'd love to see who's listening, so please connect with us on Facebook or Instagram. Just do a search for Walk in Truth Show. Now, back to Pastor Michael Lance right here on Walk in Truth.
Now, David thought this was just going to be an average day of giving judgment in other people's cases. It's much more convenient when we're talking about somebody else. It's much more convenient if I can hit somebody sitting next to me when a sermon is going forth and say, "Did you hear that? Did you hear that?" Or when a sermon is being preached, to think to yourself, "I wish so-and-so was hearing this right now. In fact, I'm going to get a copy of this message and send it right over to them." Wait a minute. You might want to look at the log in your own eye first. Then you'll see clearly about the speck in your brother's eye. And so David now has been confronted. And he's probably kind of getting used to this. And so she says, she talks about the banished one that he has not brought back. And he says, for we shall surely die, 14, and are like water spilled on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. Yet God does not take away life, but plans ways so that the banished one may not be cast out from him. Is that theologically correct? Let's break it down. She says when we die, it's like water being poured on the ground. So if you've ever taken, say you had a cup of water in your backyard, and let's say that you poured it into a plant that wasn't looking so good in your yard. That water immediately what? It starts to seep into the parched ground. Can you gather it back up in the cup? Nope. Once the water's poured out, it's gone. And once life is over, please hear what I'm about to say. It's over. If you want to reconcile a relationship, You want to make something right. God's been putting something on your heart. Do it now before the water gets poured out into the ground and you can't scoop it back into the cup again. Everybody with me? Don't do it at the memorial service when it's too late. Now look, God is a God of grace and we all have our regrets. But we can learn from maybe times when we did it wrong. I think the woman saying, King, there's a sense of urgency that you get this right. And then she says, God even has ways for banished ones to get back. And I think she's correct. James 5, 19 and 20 says, my brethren, if anyone among you strays from the truth and one turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will save his soul from death and cover a multitude of sins. We certainly are on a search and rescue mission as a fellowship, are we not? And sometimes the hardest cases we have are wayward sheep, prodigal sons and daughters, people who have sinned against the Lord and have gone out and we don't know where they are. And sometimes we've tried and we have biblical formulas for how we're supposed to do this. So it's not always that we have to reach out the olive branch, but not everybody takes it. Now she says, now the reason I have come to speak this word to my Lord the King is because the people have made me afraid. She kind of goes back to her own story now, but she's saying that the nation is at risk because Absalom is supposed to be in line for the throne. So she says, your maidservant said, let me now speak to the king. Perhaps the king will perform the request of his maidservant. For the king will hear and deliver his maidservant from the hand of the man who would destroy both me and my son from the inheritance of God. Then your maidservant said, please let the word of my lord the king be comforting. For as the angel of God, so is my lord the king to discern good and evil. And may the Lord your God be with you. The woman cleverly returned to her story, but she kept weaving her story together with David's story so that he would be on the hook for a decision. The whole reason that Joab has put this pretend situation in her mouth was to get the king to see his own situation, to see his wrong. And sometimes when we're listening to a Bible story, God's intent is for you to see where you fit in the story. So you don't just listen to the Bible as someone who's sitting in the stands as a casual observer. In the Jewish mind, when these stories were told, they would ask, where do you see yourself in the story? You might want to just pause for a moment and ask the Spirit of God to help you to see what application you might make in your own life. Because if you don't apply God's word, you're just a hearer of the word and not what? A doer. And you become self-deluded. And that's James 1:22. And so the king answered and said to the woman, now he's starting to get the idea that there's somebody behind this that he knows. He says, please do not hide anything from me that I am about to ask you. And the woman said, let my lord the king please speak. It almost seems like the tables have turned. Now he's asking for permission from the woman if he can speak. It seems like she's taking control of the conversation. You ever been there before? You thought you were in control of a conversation, and now the other person is allowing you to speak, and you're the king. Well, we'll leave that for you to ponder. So the king said, is the hand of Joab with you? You could put it this way. Is Joab behind this whole thing? And the woman answered and said, as your soul lives, my lord the king, no one can turn to the right or to the left from anything that my lord the king has spoken. Indeed, it was your servant Joab who commanded me, and it was he who put all these words in my mouth of your maidservant David's on the throne. I knew it! Could hear Joab in all of this. Which indicates something else. Joab probably has been having conversations with David for a couple of years about Absalom. Maybe something like this. Give the kid a break. You know why this happened. You've been through your own turmoil and God forgave you. Maybe Joab's trying to be that voice of reason and David's been difficult and obstinate. Maybe you've been the person on this side, the Joab person. Give the kid a break. Come on, man. Or maybe you've been David. No. No. I won't. Well, we'd like to think that Joab's in the right position, but you're going to find out, since this message is called The Best Laid Plans, that even though Joab meant well, in the end, this is not going to turn out real well. And so, I don't know if Joab was standing behind a curtain in the king's court listening to how she tells the story, right? Oh, good, yeah, oh, good, good. Well, he did this in order to change the appearance or the course of things, verse 20. Your servant Joab has done this thing, but my Lord is wise like the wisdom of the angel of God. She's trying to soften things on Joab, I think. To know all that is in the earth, your servant Joab did this to change the present situation, NIV. Then the king said to Joab, get over here. Loose translation, come into my office. What are you up to? He said, behold now, I will surely do this thing. Now Joab is in the first 20 verses. He's the fixer. And so David acquiesces. He surrenders to it. He's convicted and he says, okay, I'll do this thing. Go therefore and bring back the young man Absalom. Okay, I hear you. Got the point. Go get the boy. But was David's response correct? Well, we're going to find out that as human beings, we can't see through everything. Maybe there was a reason that David's heart was in turmoil. Maybe there was a reason that David wasn't ready. It's not always easy to discern timing of things. And so David's scheme is one of compromise. Joab tries to fix, David compromises. And there's a time to compromise, especially if the Lord's speaking to you. But it's not, you don't just say yes to everything. And so Joab fell on his face to the ground. He was happy because he had risked his whole life and career. He prostrated himself, 22, blessed the king. Joab said, today your servant knows that I found favor in your sight. Whew, glad that you didn't deal with me harshly. Oh, my lord, the king, in that the king has performed the request of his servant. So Joab arose. He went to Geshur, about 80 miles away from Jerusalem, and he brought Absalom to Jerusalem. He went and got the banished one. However, the king said, let him turn to his own house. Let him not see my face, 24. So Absalom turned to his own house and did not see the king's face. So the king said, he can come back into town. He can go back to his place, but I don't want to see him. Does that tell you something about where David was?
You've been listening to The Best Laid Plans, Part 2 on Walk in Truth. That was Pastor Michael's teaching in 2 Samuel chapter 14. If you need prayer or encouragement, call us at 844-48-TRUTH. That's 844-48-TRUTH. Now here's Pastor Michael with a final word.
Well, as we jump into The Best Laid Plans, Part 2, you know, it makes us think a little bit about how we navigate life. And, you know, sometimes when we're in a difficult situation and we want to fix it, we say something like this, okay, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do it now. But how do you know in life and as you navigate your walk with Jesus, how to fix something now or how to wait on God? Sometimes it feels like there might be a tension between the two. Maybe you have a relationship right now that's strained and you've tried a couple times to do the right thing. Maybe you've been kind or, you know, you've reached out the olive branch as it were, and you're not getting anything back. That could be an indication that you need to wait on the Lord, right? But there may be something else where it's right before you right now. You've got door A and door B. What do I do? Well, I think what you do is you go to your Bible first, make sure you bathe everything in prayer, get godly counsel, because we don't know everything, and there are people in our lives who can help us. And it may be that the answer is to wait on the Lord, or it may be that the answer is clear, but you just needed a little bit of a nudge, a little confirmation, and that's often how life can work. But just make sure you press into the things that you know are true. And when you do, I don't think that you'll be going the wrong direction. This Walk in Truth is Pastor Michael Lance. And hey, if you're new to Walk in Truth, it is actually a ministry of Living Truth Christian Fellowship in the city of Corona, a great church here that I get the privilege to be one of the pastors. Hey, if you'd like to learn more about the ministry and the church behind Walk in Truth, go to the website. It's walkintruth.com. Click on the church tab, walkintruth.com. Click on the church tab. You can find out more about us and the heart behind the ministry. You can even drop us a note and let us know how we can pray for you. And we'll catch you right here tomorrow.
Remember, Walk in Truth is a listener-supported ministry. Visit walkintruth.com to give. And join us tomorrow for part 3 of The Best Laid Plans.
He couldn't wait anymore, and so he sets a fire. Maybe he's a bit of a narcissist. Maybe he has an entitlement syndrome. Maybe he's arrogant, insolent. And Absalom said to Joab, "Well, I sent for you, and you didn't come. You're not returning my phone call, so what else could I do but set your field on fire?" Wow. You need to get back to me when I email you, bro.
I'm Mike Massaro. Thanks for listening to Walk in Truth, where it's our goal to equip you to reach out with God's truth to all people.